This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And welcome into another edition of More Outdoors. Glad to have you with us for our 7 to 9 a.m. two-hour journey to the great outdoors each and every Saturday morning. Coming up next hour from 8 to 9, Keith Lusher and Wendy, the Bayou Woman Billyot, will be joining me for our monthly program called Hunt Fish Talk. It's a fellow Outdoor Writer Association members, and we have discussions of issues of interest to Louisiana outdoorsmen and outdoors women. This Saturday morning, we're going to continue our discussion of the speckled trout issue here in Louisiana. It's somewhat controversial, and people were, you know, really brought it to the forefront and focusing in on it. But evidently, you know, this COVID-19, coronavirus, Chinese virus, whatever you want to call it, has just taken center stage and consuming everyone, rightly so. It's a very important issue and kind of brings to mind what the real priorities in life are, and taking care of family and friends and getting through tough times like this is going to take preference. But at the same time, we still keep our eye on the outdoors. It's really one of the few things we've got left in Louisiana. Theaters, restaurants, concerts, any type of social gatherings with any amount of people has been put on hold and canceled and postponed. But fishing and turkey hunting, for right now, that's about all we've got. And that's what we're going to continue to talk about. Let me introduce a co-host of this program for this first hour, Chris Berzal, Louisiana outdoor writer, a longtime friend of mine who took kind of a hiatus from the outdoors. But, boy, he is back now in this new social media format, and you can catch his stuff on LouisianaSportsman.com and on Facebook page. Chris, welcome to the show. Glad to have you back with us, my friend.
Hello, Donald. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. Glad to have you joining us. If you would, tell people where they can find some of your postings and your work right now.
Well, I just sent most of my work that I'm doing right now is with Louisiana Sportsman, their website and the magazine itself, and my Facebook site, Chris Berzoff. Very simple. A lot of stuff I look at, I have interest in, especially speckled trout fishing, turkey hunting, you know, those are my favorites, and it's a wonderful thing we do.
Well, it's quite a bit different. I mean, you were one of the most prolific print journalists for outdoors in Louisiana for a long, long time, and we know what's happening and what the future of print medium is, but, boy, you certainly made a great adjustment to the social media aspect of it.
Well, it's, as you know, Don, you know this above all, that, you know, I've met and you and I have been close over the years. What we do is very, very passionate for us. I mean, you know, being out in the outdoors, meeting the finest folks I've ever met in my life, working with adults, working with children. And again, the camp life, the camaraderie, the hunt's part of it, the fishing's part of it, but it's a social endeavor. And, you know, we all become close and we enjoy a common goal, a common passion, and it's just a wonderful thing we do.
Well, and you're very good at it, and thanks for being with us. We've got a mission this morning. We're going to talk turkey. You know, we've got Alabama, Mississippi seasons are open. Texas opened some of its areas today. In Louisiana, we've got to wait. Next week is the youth and, physically disabled, but we've also got the regular season not opening up till April 4th. And we're going to talk a lot more about turkeys in Louisiana, but we've got a special guest that is along with us. And I'm going to turn this over to you because you've been knowing this guy for a long time, and he's been recently honored with a big award. Tell us about Ron Jolly. Ron's with us right now. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Don, Chris.
Good morning.
Are we keeping?
How you doing, Ron?
Are we keeping you from? Are we keeping you from killing a turkey this morning, Ron?
I don't know if you're keeping me from killing one, but you're sure keeping me from hunting one.
Well, we hope to not take too much of your day, but I understand this is prime time right now for listening for turkeys. Chris, tell us about Ron's award.
Okay, Ron is, for people who don't know Ron, but a lot of people do. Yeah, he's from, he's born in Yulton, Louisiana, Tensaw Parish. And, he's just a, his father hunted turkey, one of the few people at that time when he was growing up hunting turkeys. He did hunt turkeys all over Louisiana, but kind of as people remember Tensaw National Wildlife Refuge or remember Mills Bayou and some very notable hunts there beginning at age four for Ron. I mean, Ron was out there at age four with his father. So just wonderful, wonderful experience for him. But in 1987, Ron produced over 30 feature videos and numerous instructional videos for companies like Primos Hunting, and everybody knows the truth about hunting wild turkeys by Primos. And he also worked for Woods Wise, Quest, and Old Man Tree Stands. And, of course, himself, Ron's just like you and I. He's an accomplished award-winning outdoor writer whose work has appeared in Turkey Country, Gamekeepers, Turkey Hunting, numerous other magazines, and he also did a stint as an executive producer and creator of the Outdoor Alabama television series, where he lives now. And Ron met the love of his life, the lovely Tess Randall, and herself, an award-winning outdoor photographer, but more than that, too. She was an outdoors lady from the start, hunted with her father in a hunting club, and there's a story about that. We'll get to that at another time. But she's a wonderful photographer. You'll hear more about his book later, but just her photography is in many magazines, many written media. Just a wonderful photographer, and her prints are outstanding, just outstanding.
So this award is for the National World Championship Calling Hall of Fame. Tell us more exactly that is, Chris.
Okay, Ron got awarded in the media category for the National Wild Turkey Federation Grand National Calling Championship Hall of Fame. There are some other categories which I really can't recall right now, but this is specifically in the media category. What's really a celebration for us in Louisiana is that Ron is the first native Louisiana to enter. And Don, you and I know, in Louisiana, we kind of got into turkey hunting a little later than many parts simply because, we had a lot less birds. We had to have restocking occur in the 60s and into the 80s and 90s. And, myself, I went to meet Ron at Willow Point and killed my first bird, but was just mentored by Ron, learning what to do in terms of turkey hunting. I was an active outdoor rider, but, I killed deer and fished everywhere, rabbits, squirrels, no problem, but turkeys I didn't know anything about. So Ron took me under his wing, had that famous hunt, and going back to his honor, he's the first native Louisiana to enter into the Hall of Fame in the media category.
It's quite an honor, but as far as getting started in turkey hunting late, speak for yourself, Chris. I was turkey hunting before turkey hunting was cool. I started back in 1975 when, like you said, there were hardly any turkeys in my area in the Florida parishes. Ron, when did you first start hunting turkey, and when did you kill your first turkey?
I kind of started unwillingly. My dad had a hearing issue, and he would take me to listen, and he taught me what to listen for, and I would hear a gobbler and point it out, and then he would promptly take me back to meet my mother to take me to school. So that wasn't real fun.
Well, hopefully it became a symbiotic relationship.
It did. I killed my first bird when I was 12, so I had to do some serious math to tell you what year that was. My wife, Tess, is sitting here, so We can't talk bad about her.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. Let me tell you, that picture, those photographs that are in your book, The Memories of Spring, are compelling and breathtaking. And there's one in particular. It's on page 132, and it's two birds standing together, two big gobblers. And I got to tell you, that picture means a lot to me because last year, of everything I've ever done in my life, I think I accomplished the single most difficult thing. I shot two birds like that with one shot, and it was filled both tags immediately. And they were kind of standing about like that when you see them, and it just brings back some really good memories. And throughout the book, it's just peppered with these excellent photographs. You did good marrying a photographer that helped you get some more work, too.
Well, there's nobody like her. I can tell you, I assist. When I retired from the state of Alabama, I thought that I was going to join her and become an outdoor photographer. I quickly learned that it's a lot more to it than it looks like. I mean, she spends more time with turkeys than anybody I know. It's just every day, every day, every day. And that's what it takes to get shots like that. She's excellent at it.
Well, it's very difficult because I've done some of it. As a matter of fact, that same hunt when I shot those two birds, I called my buddy over, and he came and sat down, and I was calling and using my camera and caught his kill on camera. So, but I know what it's like. It's as hard shooting them with a camera as it is with a firearm, and she does an excellent job, and I'm sure she's won some awards for some of her photography. Guys, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the book Memories of Spring, written by Ron Jolly, who we are depriving of listening and calling turkeys right now. So we're not going to keep him long, but we can get him to talk more about his book, where you can get it, and we are congratulating him as being the first Louisianian into the National Wild Turkey Federation World Calling Championships Hall of Fame. Don Dubuque, along with outdoor writer Chris Berzah, Ron and Tess Jolly, and you right here on More Outdoors. We're back after this time. And good morning once again, and we're with Ron Jolly, a book author, as also his wife Tess Jolly, who's his photographer. Just won an award with National Wild Turkey Foundation. We also have Chris Berzah, fellow outdoor writer, along with us, and we're going to talk about Memories of Spring, an excellent book. And, Ron, I got to tell you, I'm one of those guys, a few guys, according to you, who still enjoys stories written by sappy old men. I think it's an excellent book. It covers all the bases. It's got highs and lows. It's got the emotional aspect. It's got some technique and how-to type stuff in it and a lot of humor, too. I think it's a wonderful book. Thank you so much. And Chris, what is your opinion of Ron's book?
Oh, it's wonderful. Ron did a great job, just an excellent job, in showing the essence of the hunt. I mean, anybody, you know, harvesting a turkey is only one small piece of a hunt, really. But being in that contest with that gobbler, what goes on with, it's like every gobbler you hunt, and you know this well, Don, and of course Ron does too. Each and every bird that we hunt is different, behaves different, and it's so much fun. And especially if you're sharing with someone who's filming it or one of your friends. I mean, Ron just takes those moments and puts them down in words, and that is the essence. That's what makes us passionate about going after those birds. And that's the essence, and it's the truth about that. It's the real truth. That's what drives us turkey hunting. It's not so much the kill. It is the duel, the contest, and the interaction with that bird. And, you know, we go back to the camp later on, and we all sit and discuss our day turkey hunting, and what do? We tell the stories, and we give these birds names. And Ron just does all that and puts that in words and does a great job with it.
I think my two favorite chapters are the grudge gobblers, because I've had a few of those in my day, and also the character turkeys, where you give them names, because I've done the very same thing, some of which we cannot mention on this show. But, Ron, if you would, tell us, this is like a life's work for you to accrue all of this knowledge, stories, and information. What did you set out to accomplish when you decided to write this book?
Well, my goal when I wrote this book was to make it more than a turkey book, and you can't you can't really say that it is what you want it to be until someone else says it, and you said it. It's a life book as well. It's about how the game of turkey hunting has shaped and changed, and my life informed who I am and what makes me happy and what makes me angry, because turkeys do both. And Tess's work in it, just icing on the cake. Turkey hunting is a passion. It's you form opinions and you go out and try to prove it, and you get proven wrong. It's like the biggest chess game you'll ever play. And, you know, it's a game to us, but it's a life and death struggle for turkeys, because if they win, they get to stay there to the next day. But if they don't, they get to ride in your pickup truck.
Ron, what was your favorite chapter in this book that you wrote?
I don't know. I'm that old sappy guy. The Ashley Hancock stories, my dad, I promise kept, and the story about my dad at the end, the last shot, those things touched me in a way that, you know, just you can only know that God gives you things like that, and the ability to recognize them for what they are and to use them to better yourself and to be a better man or woman for the people who you care about. And it's life lessons, man. It's hard. It's life lessons, though.
As far as your favorite Tess Jolly photo in the book, which one is your favorite?
Front cover.
I can understand that. What a compelling photo that is. That says a lot. You know, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. That one might be more than 1,000, maybe 5,000 or 6,000.
Well, she is, I don't know, it's hard to choose. Her work is so good. And I finally just stopped wrestling with it, and I said, you know what's best. You pick them. So she did, and those were her choices. And I'm very, very happy with the way it all got laid out and came together. And, you know, the reviews have been very, very, well, almost make you blush. I didn't think that it would be that well received, but so far it has. And that's another God thing. You just got to thank God for the opportunities that come your way and take advantage of them.
Yep. Well, it's clear to see that you had a lot of inspiration in writing this book. By the way, for folks who are listening to this on radio, I want them to be able to see that picture on the cover, because it's beyond being described. Tell us where they can purchase the book and where they can see that cover shot.
Well, you can see it online at Amazon.com by searching Memories of Spring. If it doesn't come up, just add my name to Memories of Spring, Ron Jolly, and it will. Or if they want an inscribed copy, send $30 to Jolly's Outdoor Visions at 204 Fast Lane, Tuskegee, Alabama, 36083. And we'll be glad to sign them and get them right back to you.
And if anyone was not able to copy that down, I have that here. You're welcome to text, email me, send me a smoke signal, and I'll tell you how to get a hold of the book. Ron, before we let you go, congratulations again on the award. Congratulations on the book to both you and Tess. The future of turkey hunting. Turkey hunting is one of the greatest conservation stories in the history of the world, coming back from almost nothing to a very flourishing population. And now we're starting to see some declines and concerns. What do you think is the overall future for turkeys and turkey hunting?
Well, the good thing is there's so many people who love and cherish wild turkeys. They're going to be willing to do what it takes to keep the populations and, you know, to keep prevent them from going back to where they were, you know, for all the restocking programs and stuff. Our conservation departments, our biologists, they're all doing and scrambling trying to find an answer. And turkeys have always had cycles of plenty, and then they go down. They're not like deer. I think they're more susceptible to cold, wet springs, for instance, for the poults that hatch. Predators are a huge issue as for nest predation and that sort of thing. But I'm not concerned that they're going to go away. And I'm not concerned that Alabama's season or bag limit may go from 5 to 3. That's not a terrible thing for me, but it may take some measures like that for us to help them get through whatever it is that's going on in their world biologically. But they're a resilient bird, and you know they have the ability to just everything hits right with two or three good springs, and we're right back where we were. I would advise everybody. One thing that everybody who loves wild turkeys can do is work on predators, coons, opossums, those things, and the rest of it is pretty much out of our control.
Ron, thank you so much, and again, congratulations to you and Tess on the book. Congratulations to you on the honor of being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and we're going to let you go get this turkey. Y'all get some work done. Get some photos and maybe one for the table, and we'll stay in touch with you, and thanks so much for being our guest. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Everybody have a blessed day, and just know that we're going to get through this coronavirus.
Yes, we will. No doubt about it. Thanks again. Ron Jolly, Jolly's Outdoor Visions is the way you can get the book, and I've got the information if you need it, or on Amazon.com. Chris, we're going to take a break. We come back, you and I are going to talk some more turkey here about some of the things that are going on in our state of Louisiana with regard to turkey hunting. It is not all positive, but I think there will be some light at the end of the tunnel. We're going to try to figure out what our fellow turkey hunters in Louisiana and we can do to help bring turkey back to where its peak was. At one time, there were areas that had no turkeys. Restocking and conservation brought it back, and I think that can be continued. We'll be right back. Don Dubuque, outdoor writer Chris Barzah. You're listening to us on WWL 105.3 FM HD2 Radio, where we live stream at radio.com. We're back right after this. And welcome back to More Outdoors. Chris Barzah is with me, fellow Louisiana Outdoor Writer Association. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 504-260-6368. If you prefer to join us by text message, instant text messages come into the studio at 870-870. Chris, it certainly was a pleasure talking to Ron Jolly, and it's a great read. As writers, we really appreciate everything that went into that book, and also as photographers, it makes me feel very amateurish to see what Tess has done on that book. It's a great read, and suggest everyone get it. Chris, I wanted to talk to you about, and you and I have had discussions about turkey hunting in Louisiana and also our turkey program, and I think it's failing the hunters in a way that is just, it's got some shortcomings. And I'm hoping we can solicit help from our fellow hunters and maybe add some motivation and instill some resources to the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, who is operating under a tough job, to helping increase the population of wild turkeys in Louisiana, maybe get our season dates extended, maybe get an extra bird or two put back. We're down to two birds now from three, and and the season is short. It's been pushed back into the opening of April 4th, which is the latest of any of the Gulf South states, and anyone who hunts turkeys knows that the turkey hunt is all about being there while the gobbling is going on. That's the game. And in my particular case, if they told me you can only kill one turkey and you can't kill a Jake, but we're going to let you hunt during the peak gobbling season, I would be happy with that. That's one of the things that probably my biggest complaint about wildlife and fisheries with turkey season in Louisiana is the fact that they do not involve the hunters. We see in the speckled trout issue, they just completed a complete series of public hearings. They went all across the coast inviting fishermen to come out, voice their opinion, learn more about the management, and contribute and partake in helping describe how we're going to get back to the speckled trout population. There's several ways to skin a cat, as they've always said. Which one do we pick? and that should be influenced by the opinions of the hunters, because that's who's being served here. And I don't think that the hunters are involved in the turkey hunting, and for whatever reason. We've also got a lot of questions about the data. Do we have 10,000 hunters, or do we have 20,000? That's stated in their overview that we really don't know. And is there a way that we can get better numbers? Because the more accurate you're on the numbers when you're doing extrapolations on certain surveys and reports and interviews with a small number, you extrapolate it to get an overall number. And if you don't know what you're dealing with, if the numbers are unsure, how do you know what you have out there? Also, a lot of people would rather see more specific regulations for specific zones instead of just three zones. We've got zones that cross over some pretty poor turkey hunting and others that have great turkey hunting, but the good are suffering for the bad, because where there are good, heavy top populations of turkey, they're being restricted to lower bag limits and also the late and short seasons. Is there a better way to produce that accurate population inventory? And obviously they're determining it by the harvest and also by some either surveys or by tags. The tagging system, I think, is a failure. I don't think you can put much faith in it. Maybe they use fudge factors in that and it's built into the system. I'm not a biologist. I can't tell you that. But the empirical evidence is out there. If you're a turkey hunter, you've been experiencing less turkeys. But I don't know if the reasons are so much that because the seasons have been shortened and pushed back as it is of a population decline. And then, you know, would a limit of one bird with an earlier season happen? Is that something hunters could choose? What benefit would not taking jakes, what would that produce? Maybe hunters would prefer not to kill jakes. But we don't know how hunters feel about that. And how do we solve the problem is the big question. And you and I have discussed this. What are some of your thoughts about what's going on with our turkey hunting in Louisiana?
Well, you know, first of all, you said something that's very important, that at this time, you know, with such low numbers, and it's an estimate, like you're saying, we're estimating, and numbers are very, very important. Accuracy is very, very important. In this case, in the fall, the commission, our Louisiana Wildlife and Fisheries Commission, this whole issue came up in terms of waterfowl season. And the commissioners wanted to know how many duck hunters did we have. How many waterfowlers do we have? And they saw a decline just as we do with turkey hunters. And the basic bottom line is, with our license structure now, you know, I'm talking about for people like me, the senior license, lifetime licensing, and very other types of licensing structure, you can't be sure if we have the most accurate count, because, of course, those other licenses may actually pick up waterfowl hunters, pick up deer hunters, I mean turkey hunters. And therefore, it, you know, the reduction may not be as significant as we see in the estimate. So numbers are important, and they are working on that issue, from what I understand. Now, I looked at the numbers myself. They sent me a copy, and I'm going to tell you right now, in looking at the number of senior licenses and lifetime licenses, and looking at national trends, but looking at those numbers that we have, you can't account for all the loss in the amount of senior licenses or lifetime licenses. And I believe we're also suffering, unfortunately, from the baby boomers aging out of hunting. That's apparently going on, too. But in terms of turkey hunting, we can do better, and I think the what's important that hunters realize, however, what are the consequences if we don't sit down and look at this? And that's one thing, Don, you and I spoke about. They were suggesting a committee of people who are passionate about turkey hunting, biologists, our Louisiana State Chapter of the Wild Turkey Federation, sitting down together, putting our heads together to get better indicators, like who are the turkey hunters? How many birds are actually being tagged? Looking at increasing that accuracy. But if we don't start solving this problem, as one, you know, famous program in the National Wild Turkey Federation, the Louisiana Wild Turkey Federation. It's called Save the Habit, Save the Habitat, Save the Hunt. The problem is that the lower you go down in hunter numbers, the resources are not there eventually anymore to save the habitat. I mean, you and I have both witnessed loss of wildlife management areas in the wildlife management system. The license decline issue, we are self-generated funding for the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. The future doesn't look good. We need to do all we can to save the hunt. Looking at the records of turkey kills and the estimated numbers of hunters, I could do what we call a correlational analysis. I'm just looking at the numbers right in front of me right now, and I can tell you right away. I'm not saying that I have done the Pearson product moment correlation, but I can do and will do it one day. But the turkey estimated numbers of hunters seems to match the estimated harvest numbers. In other words, for example, in 1997 and 1998, we had between 20,700 hunters, and 1988, 20,500 hunters. But the estimate of the harvest in 1997 was 11,200 birds, and in 1998, 9,200 birds. Today, 2019, we have an estimate of 10,800 hunters and 3,200 birds harvested. That's the estimate. Guess what? Way back when they started collecting statistics in 1980, the estimated hunter numbers was 10,800 with an estimated harvest of 3,500 birds. We are now killing birds, numbers of birds, well below the first year of collecting harvest data on wild turkeys. And that's alarming. Do we want to end up losing wildlife management areas? Because there's so much our department can do. There's so much. We've got to put our heads together. We've got to start saying we've got to do something differently. Should it be region? Should we reinforce hunting? We've got to also reinforce hunting. It could also serve maybe in some areas that are facing declines. Maybe we can barter, say, okay, you guys, y'all can start hunting in this area in March, like many of you prefer, but give us some of your birds to stock as a result somewhere else. Stuff like that. We could maybe work deals out like that. And now I'm not talking about the areas along the Mississippi Delta or the Atchafalaya Delta. They were well justified in the later season. I mean, we have right next to me, Sheridan, I look at the harvest and I just go, I see one, two birds killed in a parish where it used to be 50 to 94 birds a season. And now we're only seeing one or two birds killed. So that's a significant problem. And we all know that's mostly due to the flooding. In Sheridan, it started in 2011 when we had all that big flood down here. The water is a very major problem there. And Ron Jolly said it best, predation. I saw some Texas research, which was quite startling. And, of course, I'm no biologist, but I did study biology and psychology in college and did a lot of statistics work myself. I studied field science applications and experiment methodology. And I'm going to tell you, they had some really significant depredation by hogs. And when it was almost like that, if I can recall the data, they're looking at hogs as another percentage of predation that actually reached the top layer. In other words, hogs were almost at 30% predation. Then you add coyotes, that percentage, then foxes, that percentage. In other words, with those feral hogs, we've added another layer of predators to get onto those nests. Now, in some other research in other states, they're saying, oh, hogs are just opportunistic feeders. But in Texas, they actually have got some real beautiful applied research showing that the same sounder of hogs is going to the same nest repeatedly. And you know how turkeys, they'll drop one egg at a time, one egg at a time. And every time a egg was dropped, a hog went in there, and the same group of hogs, the same sounder came through there and got those eggs. So we have a, not so much new, but a very powerful predator on brown nesting birds, in my opinion. That's just some of the ideas. I don't know where we're going to go with this, Don, but, you know, those are some of the things I'm looking at.
What we're going to do is take a break, and when we come back, talk about maybe, you know, what they used to call it, maybe they still do, task force. And maybe that needs to be done with turkeys, where we have the biologists, we have representatives from the Wild Turkey Federation, Louisiana chapter. We have people who are in the industry, who have a vested interest in it, who sell to turkey hunters, and turkey hunters themselves. I think we've got an untapped resource in thousands of people who would be willing to become citizen scientists and provide the department with some very, very important data that they could help use to really, first of all, inventory the population, get a true picture of it, and then also what can be done to enhance that. Chris Berzaa, Don Dubuque, we're on More Outdoors, and we'll be right back. If you got a comment, 504-260-6368, or send us a text, 870-870. We're back right after this. All right, got a couple of texts in. One texter says that he feels powerless because he's a lifetime license holder and, you know, not happy with the department's efforts on wild turkey, but can do nothing about it in terms of, I guess, not buying a license and hunting turkeys elsewhere, which I do, and now more and more people are leaving the state of Louisiana to go doing hunting turkey, and it's costing the department. It's a double whammy. We don't get important data, and we don't get the extra fees. And I have another text in from the Baton Rouge area. It says, everywhere the hog population has exploded, the turkey population has declined. I got to believe that's true. And you mentioned research, Chris. I think we can either use other states' research or we could do our own here. You also mentioned other predator control. Restocking, that could be a possible way. And I know that the department is strapped for funding, particularly with turkeys, because it's not one of the most popular ones. But there are ways when people can volunteer their time and efforts, if there's a coordinated effort to do that, to help the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries improve and do a better job of managing our wild turkeys and getting better hunting seasons. For one thing, that wild turkey stamp is $5.50. People like myself that have a lifetime license don't pay anything for it. There's ways where I have always found that people in the outdoors, whether it's fishermen or hunters, if they are promised and guaranteed through legislation that the money that they are paying goes for the purpose intended and not being filtered off someplace else, they are always willing to pay more. I would think that a hardened turkey hunter, serious turkey hunter, $5.50, come on. They would be willing to pay double or triple that if it meant that the money would be dedicated strictly for turkey proliferation. And then that gets us some funding that can be used. But there's so many other things, like, you know, this thing I talked about on the early show about Alabama. They're asking hunters to join an avid turkey hunting survey, and they're offering them a subscription to a turkey report that's put out by the state, and they're also entering their name into a drawing that's sponsored by the Alabama Chapter of Wild Turkey Federation to give away a shotgun for everyone who participates. And they're going to ask them to sign up and register, and they will be providing information about the gobbling activity, how many hunters are out there, how many times they went, what the harvest rates are, what's the age structures and the weights of the birds. Just a lot of important data that the department is not getting now. At least I don't see where it's coming from. I'll give you an instance. A lease that I hunt on, I don't think there's ever been a biologist doing any research. At least if they did, they did it undercover, because nobody in the hunting club has ever seen anybody set foot on it. And we have got a very good turkey population, which flies in the face of what the estimates of the population are, and it's reflected in the seasons and the regulations that are put in. So, you know, I don't know, Chris, maybe you and I can be the ones to get this started and try to bring about the creation of a task force and involve citizens and get the Louisiana Chapter of Wild Turkey Federation to do more than what they're doing. I know they do some burning and some projects. Most of them are done in central and north Louisiana, not much done in southeast Louisiana. But I also see some things that they're spending hunters' dollars who maybe they don't know where the money's being spent. But, I mean, they're giving scholarships away. They're paying for travel. They're paying for archery in the schools, wheeling concerts. All of that stuff is good, and it's very noble. But I think it's critical that we restore and keep a healthy turkey population and keep that in prime focus. Your thoughts?
My thoughts, we are at desperate times, and we have to look at some desperate measures. Again, I know, and speaking to Cody Sedatal, our turkey study leader, we need to do this with science. It kind of reminds me of what happened when we took away the quality and trophy lake designations for some of these bass lakes. But we stay with only one prescription, one management prescription on those lakes for 21 years. Well, I got news. We don't do science like that. We look at a goal. We look at the variables. We manipulate those variables till we reach a goal. And staying with one methodology, sure, won't, you know, that doesn't work, and then all of a sudden quit trying, you know, and it's the same thing here. We need to look at, in my opinion, look at programs, look, do a review of the programs, talk with Cody and biologists on staff. What can we do to look at some changes in terms of how we report numbers, number one? I think, and they are working on that aspect of it in terms of licenses. But looking at the turkey harvest, do we, you know, some states do more post surveys than we do, from what I'm gathering, from what I'm reading. And do we need to maybe, I mean, when I did research, I trained sometimes even parents and other volunteers after I mentored them in collecting data that was standardized. And I watched them for a while till I could trust them to go on. And this, with these volunteers, we have baby boomers, I think, who are willing to volunteer, especially turkey hunters, who would love going out there, ride the roads to hear, you know, to look for posts and hens, to make the markings on the data documentation. You know, we have to look at changing baselines again, because what happens when you do that, you got to start from scratch and your predictions change. We have to get another baseline, so it would take a while. But like what Alabama is doing, and again, I'm a firm believer, and that goes after decades and decades and decades of research. We encourage, we reinforce people for the appropriate behavior. At first, when we had a license, we had those tagging programs. I'm pretty sure that our Louisiana chapter paid for those shotguns. I don't know if it worked. We didn't analyze the data. Is it any different than it is now? Those are some of the things. If we look at the details and pay attention to the details and the results, we can get some ideas on what's working, what's not. And, you know, a task force, Don, go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish. Well, okay, yeah, I got a couple of...
A task force, like you suggested, that's the first step we got to go through. I mean, in my opinion, for sure, you know.
Exactly. I got a couple of texts in says the season needs to be moved back to March when the birds gobble, obviously, but moving it out of March into later in the season was an effort to reduce the harvest because the data that tells them that the turkey population needs to have less gobblers killed. Well, again, it depends on the accuracy of your inventorying and your methodology to really determine that. But then it gets back to the citizen involvement and the constituents being satisfied. If they would take a smaller harvest and maybe leave the Jakes alone, maybe they could move it back to March, but that option has not been offered. Another text says, when the New Orleans area lost Ben's Creek management area, we lost the only area with good turkey numbers to hunt without being in a hunting club. Public access to reasonable turkey hunting, you know, they've got a lottery system, which I think is probably good, and you need to take the time to apply for the lotteries and keep up with it, because there could be some good public hunting, and I think that's very important to have public opportunity huntings for turkey hunters in order to keep them buying licenses and staying into the sport. Chris, we're just about out of time. We're going to have to continue to have these discussions and maybe throw that out for our listeners. They can contact you or me. Maybe they'd be willing to volunteer to serve on a task force. Now, with the technology we've got, it wouldn't necessarily have to be everybody going into a meeting. We could stay socially distanced and still have some of these meetings with input from a variety of sources, from biologists, from nonprofit organizations, from hunting club members, and just people who are really concerned. Because when you ask people for survey information at random, you're going to get random and jaded opinions. When you get someone who volunteers to participate, they're going to be motivated to provide you and do the best job that they can and stay with it instead of just blowing you off and telling you something and get rid of you. Anyway, Chris, enjoyed it. Thanks so much, and thanks for lining up Ron Jolly with that great book, Memories of Spring. What a wonderful publication. I want to encourage people to read that. And I'm going to get you coming back on again, Chris. I'm glad to see you back in. There's not enough of us that handle issues in the outdoors. A lot of hook and bullet guys out there, where to, how to, having fun. But the hard stuff, there's a declining population of us, too. Thanks for being with us, Chris. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, too, Don.
All right. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to be joined for Hunt Fish Talk by Louisiana Outdoor Writer Association members Wendy Billiott, they call her the Bayou Woman, and Keith Lusher of the North Shore Fishing Report. We're back with their discussion of speckled trout right after this timeout.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.